welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name's Adam Cook and I'm your host, joined by the lovely Chris White.
Hello.
I forgot, Chris, you're the Zero Suit Samus to my Pikmin.
I sure am. I've always thought that. Yeah, but now you've said it, it makes it real.
And the Logitech webcam to my Toon Link, Gary Bailey, is here.
Come on.
It's next. There's a Logitech webcam that splits two of my Amiibo collection because it's right on my face now. How are you doing, Gaz?
I'm good, thank you. Just tired, but
good.
It's nice to be back.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're recording this on the tail end of a bank holiday. Sod it, let's just break the fourth wall right at the start here. So I think everyone's kind of bank holiday weekend out because, of course, that's the world we live in. Everyone gets all that time off, don't they? That's a bank holiday weekend, right? No one works bank holidays, right? Right?
Every day.
It must be lovely, a world where, like, every time you see a bank holiday weekend, you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's like... Yeah, is it? Because like most people I know are just working. Like, it's
We could live the dream, I guess. But
you could live the dream. You could live the dream, Chris. You could live the dream, Gary.
I could feel it.
You could do it by playing a remaster of one of the best games of all time. He says, with his voice going a little bit high pitched and question marky at the end there. Dark Souls Remastered is out now. I'm going to just get straight out ahead of here and say that, you know, sorry our review isn't up at the time of recording, but we wanted to wait until the servers were actually playable, but, you know, whatever. We just thought that was a thing you should do. Gary, you're playing it for review, and probably by the time people hear this, if you're not a Patreon, it will be live, the review, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I've been playing it. Chris has been playing it. Is it nice to be back in the world? Well, that's a strange question to ask because nice is the wrong word. But is it good to be back in Dark Souls and with 60 frames and, you know, 4K textures where applicable?
Yeah, it's better than I was expecting.
So, I mean, same.
Because, I mean, when they did the whole remaster, but it was actually just a port, or it seemed like it was just a port, I was just, no. But playing it,
I was going to say, I don't mean to interrupt you straight away, but you've been streaming Dark Souls 3, and you've been doing that on PC, right?
Yes.
So I'm guessing you're in the same camp as me, and I'm not sure, we'll get to Chris in a bit, but like, there is something to be said for a Souls game in 60fps?
Yes. Yeah. It's surprising the difference it does actually make. Not so much the surprise when you go to Blighttown, of course, but... It's really nice to see it smooth, especially when I've played the other two. I mean, like, you know, 60 frames as well, like Dark Souls 2 on. When they did the Scholar of the First Sin on the current machines, that was 60 frames. It's dead smooth and dead nice. Dark Souls 3, okay, on console, it wasn't 60 frames. Is it with
No, it's Pro? Not. No? No, it's not. I actually booted it up the other day, and it is... I forget, I did look this up. I think it's like up to 60, but it's not. It's not like this is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not. Or in fact, Scholar, it's not like that. I was thinking of Scholar recently, and I can't remember if I own it digitally or a disc, so I must have a look. I quite fancy playing that, because I'm going to say this right here. Dark Souls 2 is a really good game.
Yes, it is.
But there you go. But we're not talking about that one. We're talking about Dark Souls, the first of the Souls of Darkness.
I was surprised at how good it looks. Because, I mean, I know it was always it was a good-looking game anyway, a lot of it down to like the art direction and stuff, but it doesn't look like a last-generation game just tarted up. It's got... Like, with the lighting effects, especially...
The thing, apparently, they really went to town on.
Yeah.
Rather, they've obviously... They've tarted up some textures, but apparently it's the lighting they really went to town on, and I think that does... Yeah, it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it really shows.
How are you finding it, though? Like, because I have played it on it, like, and, you know, I think when they brought it to backwards compatibility, I had a quick go on it just to see what it was like, and it's like, yeah, still Dark Souls. I feel like, this is one of those things I'm not sure I want to say on a podcast that can't be deleted, do you know what I mean? But I feel like, as good as this is, I understand why it's lauded as, you know, the world building is, it's fantastic. I feel like, you know how people always say, why don't they make these games more accessible? I feel like now playing through this, in hindsight, they kind of have, slowly, the Souls games got...
Yeah.
I don't, when I say Souls games, I'm specifically talking Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3. Not Bloodborne, not Demon's... Well, Demon's Souls is a Souls game, but let's just put that to the side for now. I thought the three Souls games, they did get more accessible, but they kind of never went all the way. Because it Dark Souls is... unforgiving, and in a way I don't think even the three and two's pretty unforgiving, but I feel like Dark Souls 1 is unforgiving in a way really, really few games are, Gaz.
Yeah, it's, I see what I mean, because like Dark Souls 3 especially, I think when they went over to the same engine that they used for Bloodborne, the animation and stuff like that, it's, everything just feels a lot more smooth, a lot, it flows a lot better, so stuff like dodging is a lot simpler. I mean, it's not easy, but it's easier to judge and stuff like that, whereas Dark Souls 1 especially, it's all iframe based. So it's like, you know, if you don't dodge at the precise moment, you're going to get hit. And
but even the bonfire stuff, like so there's in early, it depends how long it takes you to get there, but there's the gold armored guy I've forgotten the name of that you can free from a cell.
Lautrec.
And so most people, I think, if they find him, they free him, because why wouldn't you? Most people would free anyone. He's in a cell, you let him out. It's kind of video game logic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, can we talk openly? I think that's not a huge spoiler, but if he then goes back to Firelink Shrine, which is your central hub, I guess, yeah. You know, it's the one with the kindled bonfire where you can get 10 Estus, blah, blah, blah. If you don't kill him at the Firelink Shrine by booting him twice so he falls off the cliff, that's like switching the game to hard mode in a way, isn't it?
A little bit.
How could you know that? Like, there's the only way you could learn that is by mistakenly not doing it, isn't
yeah.
it?
It's, I suppose that's where stuff like the messages come in handy, because I've seen a few people like they've put messages in front of him saying stuff like liar or whatever, you know, to
that
effect.
Yeah, but I've also seen messages that say try jumping near a ledge, yeah. And it's just to troll people into jumping off, so I don't think you can say, this reminds me of what I said about Sea of Thieves, I don't think it's fair to say, oh, the community will police itself, like, I don't think that's... I'm not saying you're being a Dark Souls apologist, but I think you are being a little bit of a Dark Souls. Like, Chris hasn't got to that stage yet. And if you freed a guy... Because I suppose I think some people would say, oh, yeah, but when you free him, he's like, heh, 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 heh. But everyone in Dark Souls is like that.
Yeah.
Everyone in Dark Souls seems kind of, can I trust them? But if you don't... If you free this guy, he goes back to your Firelink Shrine. And if you don't kill him, later on, he kills the... I've forgotten spacing on her name. The Firekeeper. And that means that bonfire, the main bonfire, is dead. It's gone. And that is, like, I think, making even a hard game even harder. Now, I don't know that that's great game design. I think it's interesting. I think it's different. But there's elements of that. Like, so, for example, we were trying to do co-op, Chris.
Yeah, it was outside that... that kind of church with that big bastard inside.
Yeah, leading up to the gargoyle.
Yeah, and well, you laid the summon sign, and for a while I couldn't find it. So I kind of was just taken out by all these fucking guards all at once. And then I died, and then it had to take like another 10 minutes for it all to load back and to find that summon sign again and then to load you in. And I kind of managed to get you back, but it did take a while. So there are still a few issues with that.
But look, they have improved the co-op. Like, Gaz, you know, you can now password protect and sort of just make sure you summon your friends. And the level, I don't know entirely how, you know, disparate the levels can be between people, but like, I was, where would I have been? I think I'd done the, oh God, I keep forgetting the name of the bloody boss, the butterfly boss?
Yeah.
I'd already done that at the point Chris was summoning me in. So he hadn't done gargoyles yet. So I was, you know, two bosses ahead. So quite a few levels.
Yeah.
So that, you know, but that again, the butterfly boss is one of those where it's like, I don't remember a lot about this game. So I killed that butterfly, and then I realised, oh, I've got to go all the way back. And there's no quick way. You just have to go all the way back.
Yeah, that's another thing that they they made better with the following games. Yeah, with the warping.
Like there will be an elevator that somehow took you back, yeah, wouldn't there, in the next games?
Yeah, you'd have the bonfires that appeared at bosses you killed that was in, I think, started in 3. Well, it started in Bloodborne, I think, but then 3 started doing it. So then you could just warp straight to wherever you wanted to go.
Fast travel.
Yeah, whereas, yeah, like other games that did at least tend to have another route back as well. If you did, you know, if you didn't have a warp available straight away. But yeah, Dark Souls, I know they do make it's a valid point. You know, it's a very well made interconnected world. But
it is, yeah.
There are just times when you're just like, I wanna get there. I don't wanna be running for half an hour to find where I wanna go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, there are things in this first game that a remaster can't fix. And it is stuff like that. It's things that have been improved since. Whether the hardcore fans will wanna admit that or not, that's up to them, but the games have definitely improved since on various things, but this game is still a cracking game. I mean,
it's still so rewarding.
Yes, except certain bits, but we won't go there.
I mean, listen, we haven't mentioned it, so I've got to ask the question. I mean, we all know the answer, but I'm going to ask it so it's on here on record. How's Blighttown now on this version? It's fine, right?
Yep, very, very smooth. It's the whole game, not just Blighttown, has got a bit of a draw distance issue. I've noticed that.
Right.
Because, Dark Souls has always had that thing with the lighting where the lighting changes, you know, like, dramatically. You walk through a door and suddenly the lighting just, it's like someone pressed a switch. Blighttown has that. Like,
okay.
I'd done the boss there, Quelaag, and after that I thought, you know, I just want to go back to, because again there's no fast travel kind of thing, I had to go back. And going out of the little sort of tunnel that leads to her, it's quite a bright tunnel, and as soon as you walk out, like, you're stood kind of on the precipice and you can see perfectly through Blighttown, you know, it's all brightly lit, and then as soon as you step over the threshold, everything goes dark. It's weird, but I mean, I think that possibly would have took a lot more than just, like, a simple remaster to fix that.
Yeah, it would. But like the thing you mentioned about the bosses is interesting as well. They're like, yeah, you kill the boss, and then like the key or the item you need is sort of just behind them or up a set of stairs, like the butterfly one.
Yeah.
You know, you kill it and then you just go upstairs, get the thing, and you can walk all the way back. Whereas what they tended to do after this was like the boss drops the item you need, and then there's a bonfire which you can walk back to near where you want to be. And I do think that's, I don't think that's making it less hardcore. I think that's respecting the player a little more. I mean, like, Chris, you were playing it as well. So we did a bit of co-op. Will you carry on playing it?
Yeah, I think I will. I mean, I played before this. I'd only spent a bit of time on Dark Souls because I was one of those that, when it came out and I gave it a go, I just dismissed it straight away because I'm one of those pussies that likes autosaves around every corner. So I gave up. And then I remember getting rid of it. But ever since the moment I got rid of it, I was like, I really shouldn't have done that. I should have just stuck with it. And then I didn't have an opportunity to play it. And then I got involved in Bloodborne and then Scholar and recently Dark Souls 3. So getting a chance to go back, I find it, like, interesting how the time I've spent with Bloodborne has kind of given me more of more patience with it, and you kind of understand what From Software's.
Do you find it's made you less afraid as well?
Yeah. I'm quite,
like, I feel like having Platinum Bloodborne, like, I feel like in Dark Souls now, I'm like, yeah, fuck it, I'm just going. I'm just going.
I mean, when I played with you, I was, like, near the start because I just started it that morning. But I had to get to the bridge to talk to Astoria, is it? And get the soapstone. And I had to get past that Taurus demon, and it's like piss easy to defeat him now, once you know what you're doing and stuff. But I was just like, right, let's fucking do this again. Took him out, and then got to you. It's like, There's no fear in trying to fight it. It was just, you know, and that kind of continues. You're very more kind of willing to fight anything. It's not like, oh, I'm going to grind first. And like, I haven't reached that point yet. But I'm quite happy to. But we were saying it when we were playing it about grinding, like being like a JRPG. Mm. Do you spend ages grinding for you to be able to get through it, or do you just play through the game and when you get to a point where you're stuck, you do a bit of that? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I will probably play it again, because at the minute there's not a lot out there to grab me. So yeah, definitely.
Well, I always feel like, I don't know if Gaz, you've played Dark Souls more than I have, but I think I always feel like there's several points in that game that are like walls that you have to overcome. Like, I don't feel like the start of the game is particularly challenging, really, but there are sort of walls throughout the game that you, like, and I think they're different for every person. Like, for me, every single bloody time, it's the first time you find that pig, that area just defeats me so much because you have to kind of kite people out, get up there, and then even when you get up the set of stairs, there's one guy to kill, but even him, it's awkward because there's two archers firing at you.
Yeah.
And then once you kill him and get over to the archers, one of them might fall off, taking your lock on with it, and you'll somehow hit and fall off down where the boar is, and that's one life gone, and you got to do it all again. And like, that's it, it's a game of brick walls you have to break through or climb over that are different for every person, but they're so fucking steep sometimes.
Mine. I mean, I think I mentioned this in the Slack. It's like, mine is Lost Izalith. Like, you get there. I won't say too much because people might not have played it, but you get there and it's just awkward. And then the boss is the worst boss by a mile. Right. It's horrendous. Like, I want to say it was on record somewhere. I can't be certain that Miyazaki kind of said, like, we ran out of time, and they just kind of glossed over that area a bit, just rushed it to finish it. And assuming that is true, you can tell just purely from the boss, because it's so badly designed. It looks great, but it's not a fun boss to fight at all.
Badly designed but looks great. As if I needed a better segue than that, Gary.
You are very welcome.
That's a bit harsh. At the time of last week's podcast, I'd already finished it, but we couldn't really talk about it because of embargoes. I reviewed Detroit Become Human. I don't know if either of you have played it yet at all.
No, I won't. I'm not into those games.
I mean, I should start this. I didn't put this in the review because I think most people probably would know, but it's also kind of irrelevant because I'm reviewing that game. I have really enjoyed Quantic Dream's games in the past. Really enjoyed. I loved Heavy Rain and I loved Beyond. Detroit Become Human, I think, is by far the worst writing. Now, that is maybe rose-tinted glasses because I haven't played Heavy Rain or Beyond for a while, but what frustrates me about Detroit is that you know how in Telltale games and stuff you have like this illusory choice? You know, you make choice A from B and C, and it affects the game, but it doesn't really. It kind of all sort of, it doesn't, you know, it's a fake illusion of choice it's fine if you can give yourself to it. I actually think what Detroit does best is those choices do matter. So after every scene, you get this flow chart, and some are bigger than others and some are fairly linear, but some of them are enormous and they show these hugely diverging paths. And after finishing the game, and I'd actually written my review as well, I spoke to a couple of other people who would do it in the same, you know, same process, and like their stories of how the game ended were so different to mine. Like there's characters that you can play as, because you play as three androids, and like one of theirs died, and so they just got cutscenes for the rest of the game whenever it cuts where I would have had playable sections. You know what I mean? Like these are diverse paths that, you know, does diverge greatly, and that's impressive. The problem, certainly for me, is that I had no interest in seeing any of those other paths by the time the 15 hours or so of the game had finished. I feel like David Cage's team of writers, he's clearly the ideas man, and I think he has ideas with heart in them. But I think at this point it needs, I'm not going to pick on him here. I'm going to say the same of a lot of these people. Like, you know, Chris reviewed that game A Way Out
Yeah.
And I forget if we said this on the podcast, but like, Chris, you know, you enjoyed it and I enjoyed it too, yeah, what I played of it. But I think I said to you at the time, this feels like a game that's got that Joseph, is it Fares?
Yeah.
Joseph Fares, his name was? Yeah, his name all over the opening credits, all over it. Like, he did this, he did the voice acting, he directed it, he produced it, he wrote it. And it's like, it also needed a kind of a co-producer, a co-editor, a co-director who would say, hang on a minute, do you think you're the best person to do the voice acting for this game? And he then goes, oh, no, yeah, of course, it's my game. I wrote it. Who could be better than me? And then the co-producer or whatever goes, well, I'm going to just say, what about if we hired a professional voice actor? You know, someone who's actually paid because they're great at it, rather than you because you think you'll be good at it. And he's not awful, but I'm saying a professional voice actor would have been better. And it kind of, I feel like Detroit needed that, like someone to say, hang on, you know. So like the thing I used in the review is there's a scene early on and it's so heavy handed. The camera shows you this, like there's a bus pulls up, the humans get on, but the androids get on the back of the bus, which says android section. And they just stand there still at the back. There's a glass wall. They're all squished up together. The only way, well, in fact, the thing is, it's like that's one of the scenes, I think, where the co-director or whatever says, hey, David, I'm just going to say, do you think that's good? Oh, yes, I think it gets across my message perfectly. Look, you know, the segregation, you know. He goes, yeah. But the thing is, David, the only way this could be more heavy-handed is if literally it said the Rosa Parks section at the back of the bus. Like, that's the only way it could be more heavy-handed.
Yeah.
Do you think there's anything to be said for maybe we change the camera angle, make it a little less on the nose? Maybe we aim for a bit of subtlety? And that pervades the entirety of the game, and it gets worse as you play through. Like fucking Mark going on a march through a street in Detroit, and you're able to hit a button that says, you know, we have rights. I forget what it is now. You've all seen the pictures. That's become a meme, hasn't it? You know, like we have to fight the power or whatever it is. I can't remember. It's something from like a Martin Luther King speech. It's like, again, pull him to one side and say, do you think we could aim to be slightly more subtle? You know, it's so on the nose. I said in the review, there's a whole scene that's literally an episode of The Mighty Boosh. There's a scene that is literally the end of Titanic, you know, with Jack getting off the raft because he, you know, makes the raft light enough to float. Literally, that is in there. You know, there's a scene at the end, I can't wait to the game to be out a bit longer, because the Connor is actually one of the more interesting of the androids, because he's kind of got Batman detective vision, and I really enjoyed those sections. Like, I found it fun being a sort of criminal investigator. They're quite linear, but you also can miss clues and stuff, which makes, you know, makes the game change. If you find a clue, it can, again, diverge off another path. And at the end of the game, there's a scene with Connor that I had been playing it sort of in my office on my own, and my wife was in here with me for that scene, and I literally started mumbling to myself, and she says, what's up? And I said, I can't, they're not going to do this. Like, they surely aren't going to do that scene, because that scene's so cliched that even movies stopped doing that scene 10 years ago. And then they do it like note for note. And it's like, come on. Like, I don't think it's a bad game. I just think it doesn't treat the game player with any intelligence whatsoever. Like, I feel like, I think I said this in my reviews, I don't even think it's bad writing. I think it's, or rather that David Cage and his team are bad writers. I don't think that's the case. I think the problem is that I don't know this, and I apologise to him if it's not this, and I'm open to have a chat with him, but I feel like there's an air of arrogance about this game, where it's like, maybe before, it was subtle, and someone there was arrogant and went, no, they won't get it. They won't get it. We have to spell it out to them. They're thick. They won't get it. And it's like, they will. You know, games and gamers have become more intelligent. And I think maybe what made it so doubly frustrating for me is that on the back of the other PlayStation exclusive, God of War, if they can make Kratos and God of War have that good of a story, I don't think Detroit's story is anywhere near good enough.
Yeah.
When the game's all story.
You know,
if you can make me give a shit about Kratos, and yet, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not saying they're any way compared, because they're totally different games, but
You can still compare, like, the quality of the writing and stuff like that, though. It's,
uh-huh.
And how it treats its audience. Because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, you look at, like, God of War is kind of the perfect example. You look at the previous games, the audience for those games you would have expected, they just like to smash shit, basically. And, you know, they like the gore and the naked ladies and all that lot. You know, why would we make a game which then, you know, tells a tells like a really good subtle story? You know, can you imagine if they'd made it really heavy-handed and just started hammering home various points?
Like every single story point you can telegraph a mile off. Like there's a supposed big reveal later on, late in the game, involving Kara, the one they showed at E3, showing her story with like Alice, and it's so telegraphed. Like, see, cause it's a very minor spoiler. I don't think it even is a spoiler that in God of War there is a section, again, very minor spoiler, so if you want to skip 10 seconds, but there's a very, very, very small moment where Kratos reveals what Atreus is to Atreus, right? And I think in video game world, it's a case of, it's got to be this huge, dramatic moment of like, oh my God, he's what? I'm what? You know, and it's not. It's just like, oh, by the way, you're this. And he's like, oh, cool. And it's so cool and refreshing to see, and it feels real, right?
I think I even said this to you about that, because I'd seen scene, and I was like, I can't believe they did it that way. That's brilliant.
And it's amazing that it's just a father-son conversation. It's not this huge dramatic moment. In Detroit, there's a reveal about Kara and Alice, right? That earlier on, someone is trying to tell you. They're like, oh, hey, I need to tell you this about Alice. I need to tell you this. And it's like, well, go on then. Just tell me. Just tell me then. Tell me it. Oh, there's no time right now. So, but there is. There's absolutely time. 10 seconds, you could just... The reveal that it ultimately is 4 words long, and you could just tell me it, but they don't, and that's writing, that's direction, that's like, no, let's hide it till later. But it's like, but it's so obvious what he's going to say. It's so obvious. just do it. And they refuse to, and it's that kind of thing that, like, again, I'm not criticizing anyone who likes it. It's absolutely fine if you like it. I just think it needs to be better. I think when a game is so rooted in, I'm a game about story, I think it needs to deliver a better, not necessarily a better story, but a better told story. Like, the direction in terms of the voice acting is really good. The voice acting is great. I mean, there's a scene at the end of the game, right? And I was talking to someone else who was reviewing it, and they didn't choose this option. And they said, did you? Because the option that you can choose is just sing. And I had to. And he's like, did you press it? I was like, of course I did. Did you really? What happened? I was like, well, he just starts singing a song, and then all the other androids start singing a song as well, and then they all start singing a song, and then they get let off. And it's like, he's like, oh my God, that's amazing. I said, I know, but it's not supposed to be funny. But like, why did you choose that option? I was like, well, I had to. You can't give me an option in a heated up moment where it's just sing and I'm not going to pick it. I have to know what that leads to. And I think when all, again, I spoke to 3 or 4 people about the game, and I think I got the good ending. And it's so depressing. It's such a bleak game. And again, not to keep comparing to God of War, but when God of War can prove you can have levity in a game that's also still serious, like, just lighten up a bit. Like, the racial allegory here is so on the nose, and maybe there's a message, maybe there's a good message underneath it, but like, all I felt was, come the end of the game, was like, yeah, some people are shit, some aren't. You know, like, you know, in the E3 stuff, I think, was it the PlayStation Experience or something, where they showed the demo that got them all the heat, where Kara and Alice are in a fight with that sort of big fat drunk bloke?
Yeah.
I vaguely remember.
So, again, I don't know anyone else who got this scene, but I've got a scene where later on, you meet him again, and kind of just all's forgiven. Like, Alice hugs him, and he just lets you go on your way. And it's like, he beat that little girl. And it's just like, ah, oh, yeah, but if he says sorry, it's like that. Every message you deliver is undermined. And like, I don't think that he does. I don't think that's a bit that doesn't need a happy ending. Like, you escape with that young girl. You rescue her from an abusive father. And to meet her, back up with her later, and she gives him a hug, and he cries, and she cries, and we all cry. It's like, no, I don't think he needs a redemption arc. He's a, you know, yeah, he's had a hard life. That doesn't excuse beating a child. And what message is that when you're also trying to tell a message about race and segregation, you know? I don't know. I'm quite surprised at the response. I thought my 5 out of 10 would be one of the higher scores, if I'm completely honest with you. I was quite surprised to see this being so praised. And listen, opinions and all that, whatever, your review's your review. I really think the writing should be better, there are sections, like I said, there's a scene late on involving Connor. I think it might even be his last scene if anyone's completed the game. Again, I don't know if everyone gets that scene. That is so... it's borderline insulting to the viewer. It's borderline insulting to your intelligence that they deliver that scene. I felt that, there you go, Detroit Become Human. If you liked it or that scene, I really would like to hear from people what they thought about that scene, because I just felt by the end of it, the first couple of hours were good, but then I just felt like those scenes started becoming more and more prevalent that were bad, if you know what I mean. There were more bad than good scenes. Like, there's a lot about this game that is just... I'm real surprised people like it, but I guess I'm in the minority this time, which is fun. I tell you what, though, before we get into news, we'll just have a quick chat to Chris, because, Chris, you and I played some co-op.
We did.
Outside of Dark Souls. It's Sega Mega Drive Classics.
Yeah.
You've reviewed it. It's on the site.
Yeah. So, it's 50 Sega Mega Drive games that you can play on your PS4. That should have been my review, because that's all it is.
Yeah.
That's not to be down on it, but this collection seems to come out for every new console, and it's fine. Like, I don't have anything against it, because the Mega Drive was like, that was my console when I was younger. I always played more Sega than I did Nintendo, so it's always that thing of, oh cool, they're releasing it on the PS4, and then you play them, you're like, oh cool, right. And then that's it. Like, you don't spend hours with them. I think the most I did was Golden Axe, because Golden Axe, it's a great game, and it was one of my favourites back then. And it's still like the music. I remember the music and just the world. I just really adored it. And kicking those little elves about to get blue potions, that was always fun. But yeah, there's some great games still on there. You know, you've got Streets of Rage 2, Streets of Rage 1. That's one of the games we did in co-op. And I forgot that we could actually hurt each other.
So what? So you can play this online co-op?
Yeah, but it's literally... Yeah. It's all right. It's literally like two-player, but you can play with friends over the internet.
It basically takes the couch co-op, the old-fashioned, you'd be sat on a couch, and has just added netcode in so that it's like... Essentially, you connect to one another, and then I become player two, and it's actually quite cool. I thought it was a nice feature.
It's nice that they've added the online to it, at least.
Yeah, and it's smooth. Yeah. It's like, it's quite quick. You can, like, I could be in the game library, and I pick Toe Jam and Earl, as we did, and then I say, oh, multiplayer, so I'll click that, and then a little pop up comes up on Adam's screen to say, do you want to join Chris playing Toe Jam and Earl? You just press triangle, and then it will load Adam into my game, and then there you go. So it's all pretty quick. I mean, we got to try quite a few, didn't we, online?
Yeah, we did Toe Jam, we did Streets of Rage 2. I found it was a little bit of delay input.
Yes, there was.
Controller input lag. Like, not massively, only akin to something like playing an on live game, if you remember, on live.
I think
doing
the game share, something like
that's it, exactly. That is exactly what it was. Now
I think
it was
worse
exactly
on Gunstar Heroes, because I think it was a lot faster game, so it was more noticeable.
That's a very fast paced
game
as well.
It's a brilliant game, still brilliant actually.
But for the most part,
what else did we do? We did Toe Jam and Earl 2, 1-1, we did Streets of Rage, we tried Columns.
Oh fuck. Like, I had good memories of that, and they've been ruined. That's a
bad
game. It's like they've got little bits in there that kind of are nice touches, but like the Atari collection that was the volume 1 and 2 that was released last year, that, I mean, they were all the same Atari games, but they did something different, which I really like, was they let you view the like instruction manual, and like the front covers of those, like if you look at an Atari box, the artwork's incredible, like for what the game actually is. I would have liked to have seen like old instruction manuals for all the Sega Mega Drive games, a bit of artwork, maybe some kind of concept stuff. But it's just 50 games that you can play, and like you don't you don't want to be playing them when you've got so much else out there that's like, oh, God of War, obviously. But there's lots of games around that I just would quite happily play rather than these. I mean, it's nice, again, like nostalgia. It's always better in your mind. I think no one's going to go back into these and spend hours with them, even if they were fantastic, and they still are to a point. They're just not. They're not modern games, and that's my problem with it. And it just feels like
sometimes it is nice to go back.
It is, but like it's sort not of for long.
Playing devil's advocate a little bit, but sometimes it's nice to go back. But I mean, I've played a few like retro games myself, like a little bit recently at friends, and it's really nice to play them at the time. But then I kind of get the whole thing is like afterwards, I'm like I'm not going to play it. After, I think, you know, my own
problem
kind of thing.
The problem is, I think the online co-op is a nice idea. I don't think it is a replacement for sitting on the sofa with your friend playing it like you did back in the day. And it's like, it's almost a curio. Like, Chris and I played, we were playing for about an hour doing co-op, but we kind of just jumping in and out of other games. And at the end of it, we were both kind of like, well, there you go. Because it's not the same as sitting there in the same room, and these games I feel like were designed to be played like that. You know?
Yeah,
a bit like Mario Kart.
Kart.
It's good to play online, but it's never the same as sitting there with other people playing it on the same screen.
Yeah, definitely, I agree with that. Yeah. But yeah, that was Sega Mega Drive Classics. That's pretty much it.
Ending on a
okay,
ending on a slight low.
Can I just quickly end on a high? It's a little funny anecdote for you. I wanted to talk a little bit about Agony, which is a game that's completely flown under the radar, for me at least, which is it's called a dark fantasy survival horror, which sounds amazing. I only got to play like 20 minutes last night before I came to bed. I wanted to get up a bit earlier and play some. But I woke up in between my slumber to a weird dream. I just want to quickly mention the dream because it was insane what happened. So there's a bank heist involving Danny Dyer and some fat bloke. I don't know who it is. But we split up, and then he took the money and I was left on the ground with a load of people, which again, I don't know who they are. And they tried to shoot us. And I managed to run away and climb into the helicopter that they were in. And I was in the back with like a cover over me. And I heard them talking. And I was trying to kind of take them down because they had all the money. And then my arm poked out of the cover. And they saw me. And they reached for their gun. So in the dream, I jumped out the helicopter. But not only did I jump out the helicopter, I jumped out my own bed and fell on the floor. And took the whole of my duvet with it and completely shit my wife up, shit myself up. I was on the floor in a heap. And I don't know why. I've never done that before, but I literally jumped out of bed. Like, I remember rolling out and smashing my arm on the floor. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about Agony, but I couldn't get up because I was just a bit distressed. But that was a little story for you.
I mean, if we're talking about dreams, I had a dream last night where I dreamt that my dog grew too big. And
like Clifford.
Kind of like he's. I don't know. He just grew fucking enormous. He was huge and like a horse. And we didn't know what to do. And he's a Cocker Spaniel and he shouldn't be the size of a horse. I mean, no dog should be the size of a horse. But I dreamt last night he grew really big. And I woke up feeling really, really confused. Yeah, I don't know. Right, let's talk about Battlefield 5 because it's not out. It's not out at all. Battlefield 5 or Battlefield V. See, this is interesting because it's not Battlefield 5. V is for Victory, I believe. Battlefield V releases on October the 19th worldwide. It's caused quite a stir on the Twitter sphere and we'll get to that. But before we do, Battlefield V is a homecoming for DICE as a studio. Oscar Gabrielsson, general manager at DICE, said this. A return to an era that came to define the franchise. But as nostalgic as we are about World War II, we wanted to change the preconception of the era with an unexpected portrayal of this familiar setting. Our vision is to let players explore new and untold sides of one conflict that shaped the modern world. The scale of each battle and level of immersion is unlike anything we've done before in Battlefield, and players are in for an epic journey. Multiplayer will have customizable soldiers, weapons and vehicles that evolve with progress. 64-player conquest returns alongside grand operations and the new Tides of War mode that will be a live service. That's going to be... Grand Operations are going to be revealed at EA Play next month, 3-3. There's no premium pass. All players get access to all maps and modes, and the community will not be fragmented. And so this is essentially like... It's how bloody hell this is. Without literally having diagrams and pictures... Battlefield 1, not the original game, Battlefield 1, the one we reviewed last, the one that Chris reviewed, the 10 out of 10 one, the Battlefield World War 1 game, had that world, that war story sting. This seems like Battlefield V is going to do that with World War 2.
Yeah.
I think I got that right. It looks pretty impressive, as Battlefield games always do. Fuck it, I'm skirting around it. Basically, the reason it's caused a big furore is because it's got a woman on the cover. God forbid.
I know, it's... Oh my God.
I hate the internet sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I logged off. When I saw this, I tell you the moment I decided that's me off Twitter for a couple of days, when I saw a fucking hashtag, not my Battlefield.
Oh my God,
that's me off for a few days. I'm sorry. Like, you've... Do you know, I want to play devil's advocate almost and say that I don't actually feel this, but in a way, I almost envy people that can get this angry about this thing, because I don't have the time to get this angry about these small things like this. Like, I don't want to get too in the weeds here, but like, my dad was in the Royal Green Jackets, and like, he took a bullet in the leg for his soldiers and that. And I'm telling you this, and this doesn't mean that he speaks for all ex-serviceman. I mean, he's dead, he can't. But the point is, he'd be fucking ashamed that people were trying to pull this shit.
Yeah.
Ashamed to that people were saying, like, oh, not my... How dare you put women... Like, I'm telling you now, he's an ex-serviceman who took a bullet for his country. I don't follow in his footsteps. He was a royalist sort of thing. I'm the farthest from that you could possibly imagine. I pray to God my kids never do, you know, national service, you know, that sort of stuff. Never go into the army. I pray that it never comes to that. I don't want them to do that. But I always respected my dad, because he did stuff I could never dream of doing. I always said my dad lived 10 lives in the time it would take me to live one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm telling you now, someone like him, and I know the people he would have been with, would have been disgusted that people would use this kind of thing to target people this way. It's fucking disgusting.
Yeah. It is. Like,
it is appalling.
Women played a huge role in World War II. You know, like, not always necessarily on the battlefield, but that, like, it's disrespectful to the fact the fact that millions lost their lives anyway by some fucking fat slob behind a keyboard using a hashtag not my battlefield. Fucking suck it up, mate. It's just disgusting. And people need to be ashamed of themselves. Like, I don't think that, like, in today's day and age, people will change, but it never will. There's always someone that just has a problem with it, whether it's a woman, whether it's a black person, whatever. Like, just fuck off. Like, gay people, whoever. Everyone's got a problem with it. You're just a twat. You're a twat. And you need to grow up.
The trouble is, and I do believe this, I've said it to people before, and I've sort of almost in a hyperbolic way, but I do think that social media will be the downfall of society.
Yeah.
I do, because the thing is before social media, what you'd have done is if you were one of these people who were just completely offended by it, and like, how dare you put a woman on the cover? You just wouldn't buy the game. But now everyone has got to tell everyone that they're not going to buy the game. They can't just do it. You can't just fucking quietly do something. You have to tell everyone about it. It has to be... I have to tell you what I had for breakfast, Cinnamon Graham's, actually, because I was in a rush to do the podcast. But, like, you have to tell everyone what you're doing all the time. And I just think it'll be a downfall as a society. I really do, because it's just... The game looks good. I mean, I didn't play enough of Battlefield 1 in the end. This one, I keep meaning to think, I should go back and play that because, you know, when we give a 10 out of 10, I like to play a game like that. But like, it's, I don't play enough online shooters. The other day, I was playing Overwatch, so I'm trying to get back into that. And I was like, God, yeah, it's good fun, isn't it, playing online? You know? Mm. But, like, you know, Gaz, Battlefield V?
I don't know. I mean, I'm on board with the ideas and stuff like that. I just don't think I play shooters enough anymore.
It doesn't matter, does it?
No.
That's the thing I think that boils down to it for me. It's like, it doesn't matter. Like, move on.
Yeah.
Stop, like, you know, just stop. It bugs me when people label everyone. That's all this. Everyone says don't label people, and yet it's all society seems to do is label people. It's like, can we not just be fucking good to each other? Yeah. Can we not just be cool about life? Can we not just realise that, you know, you're on this planet for a finite amount of time, and can we not just try and spend it being half decent? Like, I don't know. I don't know. It just fucking does me in. It really does. Yeah. Let's talk about PlayStation. Because PlayStation boss has said the PS4 is in its final stage of its life cycle, Gary Bailey. What do you think about that?
I'm not sure.
Really? That's not
I personally think that there's plenty of life left in this generation of consoles.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose
it's going to be a few years yet.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? 2021, they said they're going to be.
It sounds like. Yeah, yeah.
They, well, that's when they said they're going to be supporting PlayStation 4 at least to that point. Which that suggests to me that probably, 2020 we're looking at? Maybe PS5 or whatever it's called. I mean, I suppose it's not too early, but I feel like maybe it's too early to be saying that. You know, because there's still so much to come.
If it's entering its final phase, I mean, so when did the PS4 come out? What year did we have the PS4? Okay, so it's 2019 now. So let's say that let's just assume there's three phases, right? So phase one was its release, phase two was its dominant years. So that's 2014 to 2016, 2016 to 2018, 2020, you know, which is now, and then 2018 to 2020. So I would say that each cycle is about 2.5 years. So yeah, 2021 does sound like the sort of, yeah, the PS. Well, let's say the PS5. I don't know. It could be the PS5, whatever it is. But
I'm sure it will be.
I'm going to say the same thing I said like in 2014. I don't need a new console if all it is more powerful. Like, I don't know. You know, it's not like the PS4 is struggling. It's not like games look bad on it, is it?
No, I don't know what more they can do, to be honest. I mean, there are a few things, you know, obviously you can make it now that every game would be 4K and they'd be able to run in 60 frames, that kind of thing. But the problem is with consoles is you always get that point where the tech moves a bit too far ahead and you can't do the 60 frames all the time kind of thing.
And yeah,
it's just, I don't know whether it's a point now where we don't really need generations. Like, we could make, let's say this next console comes out and it's, you know, everything could be photorealistic and it could run like a dream kind of thing. I mean, the only thing you could really change beyond that then is stuff like AI and things like that.
But what about if, when he's referring to PS4, he means just the base model? Because they do refer to, like, PS4 Pro sales, PS4 sales. What if all he's saying is that the PS4 we're going to start phasing out because we've got the Pro and that's the move to the future? Because, yeah, I think there's lives left in this bloody thing, like you. And I think also that unless you can guarantee me every single game will hit 1080p60 as a minimum on that next system, I don't want to know. Yeah. I'm not interested.
Unless there's something really amazing, I couldn't see me picking this up like day one.
I mean, they must have some stats about 4K.
Yeah.
Because they will have to be pushing a more power. It'll have to be a more powerful machine, which means 4K native, 60 frames native. So they must have some stats that suggest there's a high uptake in 4K panels. And apocryphal tales, I haven't seen that in people I know. I don't know many people who have got 4K tellies.
I don't. And only a couple.
And in this country as well, like, all right, you know, Virgin have laid a lot of cable down the south coast where I live, so I've got better internet now. But at the same time, I don't know that a lot of people are paying for that level of internet that means they can actually stream 4K.
No.
Or you know, or have a £400 Xbox One X that can, you know, do 4K Blu-rays in 4K. I don't know that... I don't know. It's I guess we'll have to see, won't we? I suppose. Mm. I don't know. Speaking of having to see, Telltale Games have delayed The Wolf Among Us Season 2 into 2019. Mm. To me, that's fine. Oh, because I love that first thing. Don't cock it up.
It's time, though. I hope they really improve the engine. I think they need a brand new engine, because the Telltale games run like arse. Mm-hmm. And in this day and age, I mean, they shouldn't be running that badly now.
See, the last season of Batman was very good. I found it ran very well.
Okay.
PC, that was. So.
Yeah, but PC, there's never really been a problem. It's always been console, I think, and then iPad.
I don't think there's an excuse that they could come up with.
There isn't. They might have an excuse in the fact that they laid off 90 staffers, about 25% of the workforce, last November. Yeah. So, because they said basically, they've not stated that, but it's the fundamental changes at Telltale since we first announced the game, which, you know, fundamental change certainly is 25% of your staff disappearing. The announcement will allow us to focus on quality but also experiment and iterate in order to craft something truly special. Ultimately, our goal is to deliver an experience deserving of the passion you've consistently shown. It will, because, like, god damn it, that's been a long time coming. You know,
I just hope that they don't announce in between that, we're doing another series of whatever, or starting a new series, because that'd be such a bad move if they suddenly did that.
I mean, I will say I've read Fables and I can't remember anything about the first series of that. Now there's going to need to be a massive previously on, because I can't remember much about that at all. The Telltale series Wolf Among Us.
I've still not played it.
Actually, it's really good.
Yeah, everyone says it's really good. To be fair, I mean, I'm not a big fan of that type of game, so whether I will play it or not, I don't know. But I did get it, I think it was on Games with Gold or something like that a while back. So yeah. I've got it, so I can play it at some point.
Okay, well, Ubisoft have announced that the Far Cry 5 Hours of Darkness is going to be the first DLC. You transport players back in time as they play Wendell Red Redler, which is a great name. You must find and rescue the fellow squad members from hostile forces during the Vietnam War. Solo and online co-op is there June the 5th, so quite soon. In addition to the DLC, players will have access to Vietnam-based themed assets in Far Cry Arcade. I actually saw an update download for Far Cry 5 recently, and it was huge. Like, Ubisoft are brilliant at their patch notes. They put so much info into their patch notes. The trailer is only about 30 seconds long, but it starts off with, like, you know those the trials, the super cool Max thing they did. The kind of weird cartoony animation. It starts off with that, and then there's basically quite a grim scene. You know, they're just like, they've got hostages, they're threatening them, you've got to go and rescue them. There's planes. I'm well up for it, quite honestly, because I really enjoyed Far Cry 5, and I think I said at the time, like, the DLC, like, doing different things from the game, I think that's quite a good idea. Like, there's one that's going to space, isn't there? So. Yeah.
Well up for it.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm up for it.
Yeah. Adored Far Cry 5.
I need to play more Far Cry 5 anyway.
I
need to play more Far Cry 5.
I do. I mean, if you're on PS4, maybe, you know, we could do some co-op or do a live stream together or something. You know, why not? Seems like a good idea to me. 7 Football League licenses have been announced for PES 2019. The Russian Premier League, the Superliga, Klassiker, the Superliga, the Liga NOS, I can't even pronounce this one, Raiffeisen Super League, the Jupiter Pro League, and I think the biggest one, the Scottish Ladbrokes Premiership. That's really cool. So PES have come under fire, Konami have come under fire for losing, like, the Champions League license, and they did say they were going to go out and do this. Like the Swiss Super League, Danish Superliga, Portugal's league. So, I'll just read the nationalities so people can get a better vision of it here. So, the Danish Superliga, Portugal's Liga, NOS, Belgian, Swiss Superliga, Scotland, obviously, and Argentine Superliga, and exclusively to PES actually is the Russian Premier Liga, which means you can only play like Spartak Moscow and Zenit St. Petersburg and in Pez. We know it's going to look better. I think there's still two more licenses they yet to announce. I don't know what they'll be. I would imagine they're not going to be the Premier League in England. When you think about it, it's launching scarily soon. It is nearly June, and this game launches in August. So we are 2 and a bit months. Well, 3 months from that game.
I still keep saying I should play 18. So I got it.
I was hoping you were going to say I have.
No, not yet. It's on, like, I got it downloaded on Game Pass. Gotcha. Along with State of Decay 2, which I still haven't even started.
Play Pez instead.
But I wonder whether it's worth a video or something, considering I haven't.
I think so.
Well, unless you count like sociable soccer, I haven't really played a proper football game in years.
I think Pez is such, even if you're not heavily into football, the gameplay is that good, you'll enjoy it.
Man, yeah, I mean, I used to be a big fan of the Pez games. I mean,
You need to play this.
But I think the last one I played was PS2.
Okay, you definitely need to play it, I guess. You do. I mean, find the time. And also find 60 to 90 hours for me, will you, Gaz? Because Yakuza 3, 4 and 5 are being remastered for PS4 in Japan starting this August.
Is there such a thing as too much Yakuza?
No.
Fucking yes.
No! Never. Never. This is the best news ever.
Seriously, though, it's too much, isn't it?
It is too much. I agree with you. They need to space them out a lot more. You said this in Slack, how they need to stop. And I was going to say it in Slack, but I'm saving it for now. The thing is, Sega haven't had a win for a long time. I don't begrudge them the fact that people have finally cottoned on to Yakuza.
No,
and they're like, but, like, bear in mind, Yakuza Kiwami 2 isn't out yet in the UK. And 6 has just been released. That means the PS4 will have 7 Yakuza games. I mean, let's assume they release these in the next 12 months. That will be 7 Yakuza games in 2 to 3 years on PS4.
It's almost like Assassin's Creed territory.
Yeah, but they are remasters. I don't know.
I don't begrudge them. It's a good thing for people who like the Yakuza games. They've enjoyed it. They want to play the rest. But I think, I don't know, it just feels like too much in too short a space of time.
I don't know. Chris seems like he's going to play all of them by the time.
Well, have you? You need to finish 6, mate. You need to finish it because I really need to talk to you about it because it's this.
I'm about 4 hours in, mate. So it might be a while.
Might be a while, yeah. Fair enough.
I still haven't started Kiwami. I bought that months ago.
Just play Zero. Zero's the best one.
But I own Kiwami now.
Oh, okay. I figured you owned it. Okay, well, we'll play Kiwami then. Lastly this week, Sunset Overdrive. This was actually sort of leaked, revealed, whatever, quite a while ago. It was May the 23rd, so almost a week ago. Over a week ago at the time you hear this. But it's been rated in Korea for PC. Now, I really like Sunset Overdrive. I think it was one of the best Xbox exclusives, actually. I just found it really fun. But then I do like Insomniac Games' style. So it's one of the few Xbox games, bar the Halos, that hasn't got a PC version. So Insomniac have said it's up to Xbox. It looks like they may have come to some sort of agreement because the Korean ratings board has a rating for Sunset Overdrive by Microsoft Korea. Usually this means there's an announcement soon, and it would probably imply there's an Xbox One X patch. So
yeah,
all for it. I really liked that game. I thought it was
a lot of fun.
A bit of a doing because, I just thought it was a fun game. Mm. Again, I like Insomniac style.
Again, still not played it. Even though I got it with Games for Gold.
Alright.
It's one of those games that I will eventually play at some point.
Yeah. Oh, fair play. But that'd be interesting to see if it does happen. Mm.
Definitely.
Could be an easy Microsoft announcement, and it's available. It's in Game Pass, and Xbox One X patch, and PC gamers get it now.
Along with an announcement of Sunset Overdrive 2. Oh.
Well, I hope so. I hope so, because I really like that game. I just found it really fun. Really fun. Probably of its time. Don't know how well it's aged, but of its time, I really enjoyed it. Listener correspondence this week, just one question because I forgot to push the question out. It's my fault. But Darren at ROTMM wants to know why are racing games, especially sim racers like GT and Forza, considered niche and get mainstream coverage as such, yet Souls games, a true niche, get promoted as mainstream with loads of coverage? Difficult question to answer, but basically it comes down to taste, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, like,
I think it's the genre, isn't it? Because stuff like, I mean, I know it's not technically an action game, but it's that kind of feel. I think that gets more, I don't know, it gets more love than like racing games. I think it's different for stuff like Mario Kart, because there's more mass appeal to it. But yeah, I think sim racing is still very niche, even though it's a massive sport.
Sim racing has to follow a pattern. Like the whole thing that you're saying, it's sim racing. It can't be outlandish and overtly exciting. It can't have explosions going off. It's a simulation racer. Yeah. It has to emulate the engines, the tires. It has to feel like doing it for real.
Yeah.
So I think that's why specific
Horizon,
audience,
I think, gets it right. Because
I absolutely agree.
Because they're still sim technically, or they can be like very sim if you set it up that way. But yeah, there's that more fun element because you have got this open world, you can drive around, do what you want.
Yeah,
I think that's why they tend to be the ones that get more of the mainstream coverage. It's like, I mean, we all know that I love the sim racers. I love stuff like the Project Cars, Forza, Gran Turismo. But I know that not everyone loves that. Not everyone likes the kind of the attention to detail. It's not like the same, because like you'd say, oh, maybe why is it not the same for football? But it's just because football's so huge.
Yes,
just as a sport.
But, I mean, F1 is too. But I think it's that. I think finding someone like yourself, Gaz, who's heavily into those games,
yeah,
I think I'm hesitant to say I'll cover an F1 game, because although I could, I think your coverage would be more worthwhile, because I don't think there's such a thing as casual F1 fan, is there? Do you know what I mean? You're either into it or you're not.
Yeah, because
I don't know what my review would do for them.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think you could be a casual F1 fan, because you know, you've got to follow stuff like the practice sessions and the qualifying sessions, and then the race is like 2 hours, you know. It's and where you've got football, stuff's happening all over the pitch at all times, and you know, you've got half time when you can go get a cuppa or whatever. But whereas like the F1, it's just boiling it down to the thing, it is going around in circles for 2 hours, you know. And that isn't for
everyone. As my wife says, football is just a load of lads kicking a ball from one end of the field to the other and back. You know, you could make that claim about anyone. I think the difference is that the games industry as such is like, they people who are in charge, so to speak, really like those Souls games, so they cover them because they want to.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to begrudge that, because like, you know, when you think about how many games you cover that you feel you should cover for your audience, I think sometimes it's so nice to be able to just cover a game you just really, like, you know, playing God of War, like, it's just great to be able to play. Yes, you're playing it so you can talk about it on a podcast, review it, do videos, whatever. But also, it's just really enjoyable, and that's such an, you know, you kind of want to do that for as long as you can until something comes along. It's like, no, I've got to cover this now because I should, for our audience. That, like, yeah, I think that's a big part of it as well, you know. But that's the podcast for this week. You can find me on Twitter at GBSF. You can find Gary on Twitter at BlueFury47. You can find Chris at FirstAvenger83. And, of course, at God is a Geek. And type God is a Geek into your search engines for, you know, Twitter. Well, I've just told you that. Facebook, you know, everything. But the important thing to go to is patreon.com/GodIsAGeek. I hope you don't get tired of me reminding you at the end of every episode, but I'm going to have to keep doing it, because it hopefully gets people to go and have a look, that realise for $1 a month you get this very podcast earlier, and it's also longer, with a section where we talk about movies, music, TV, other stuff as well. But, you know, that's the kind of just general gist. Also, you get early videos, you get exclusive videos, you get access to our private, you know, Patreon-only Discord channel, where we always, you know, come to you for questions and stuff, which I forgot to do this week. But there you go, that's just a one-off. But other than that, thank you very much for listening, Gary. Chris, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for spending your bank holiday with me.
Oh, it's a privilege and an honour, always.
And our listeners.
Oh, always.
And our listeners, obviously. Even though it won't be bank holiday when they listen to it, but, you know. But there you go. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for being here. And we will speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye-bye for now.